Welcome to Sabbatical 101. My name is Bethany Walensky, and I'm an associate professor at Michigan State University. I had a life-changing sabbatical, and I'm on a mission to help fellow academics do the same. This podcast is a resource for all things academic sabbaticals. Each episode will provide you with inspiration and insight into the sabbatical planning process, regardless of your institution, discipline, length of sabbatical, or where you plan to sabbatical. I'm so excited to have you along for the ride. Hey everyone, this is a special episode because it's one I recorded with my husband, Daniel, about his experience as the trailing spouse on our sabbatical away in France. These episodes with my family are, I hope, helpful to you, but honestly, one of the reasons I love them is because I'm creating a record of my sabbatical and getting to hear more about the sabbatical from the perspective of my family members, whose experiences were in some ways very similar to mine, but in other ways quite different. The purpose of this episode is to help sabbatical goers and sabbatical spouses or partners think about what a sabbatical looks like from the other side. We talk about what it was like for Daniel as I was planning our sabbatical, how he deliberately chose to follow my lead and not get too attached to any one outcome, what Daniel's day-to-day experience was like on sabbatical, living in a new place and working remotely, and how Daniel thinks it's changed him and our family. I think this conversation is really rich and insightful, but I'm also biased, so I'll let you be the judge of that. I hope you take some insight away from it that will help you think in new and different ways about your sabbatical. Now, here's the episode. Hi, Daniel.
Hello, Bethany.
Thanks so much for being on the podcast today.
Yeah, this is fun.
Good. Well, I know who you are, but my listeners don't. So could you start by introducing yourself, telling us a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Sure. I'm Daniel Walensky, and I'm Bethany Walensky's husband, chiefly. I'm also a scientist, a molecular biologist. I just finished my postdoc at the University of
Michigan.
And now I started a company that is working on preventing diabetes.
All right. So we're here today to talk about sabbaticals, which I know you love talking about because we had an amazing sabbatical.
I do both love talking about it and thinking about it because it was incredible.
Yeah. And you get to talk about sabbaticals more than you would like because of my business.
Well, it's what's really kind of fun about that is I get to remember how great it was to be away in France for your sabbatical.
So. Yeah. We're constantly reliving it.
And torturing the kids probably in the same time.
This is true. So the purpose of this episode is to think about what it's like for a spouse who goes on a sabbatical away, where you're kind of I know you don't like the expression trailing spouse.
I do not.
Shaking your head. But in this case, it was my sabbatical and you and the kids were along for the ride.
We were. And I've been thinking a little bit about our conversation today, and I wanted to say something specifically with regard to that. I was very conscious about this being your sabbatical and tried really hard not to get involved really in the pre-planning process, which was pretty extensive for us, which was good. But I think, you know, to spouses out there, maybe it's useful to think about it as, you know, let them take the lead because it's really theirs. And, you know, we talked about different ideas and I thought that was really fun, but I didn't want to get too tied to one particular idea or place. For us, we were really focused on place kind of first because it was your sabbatical.
And it changed like every day.
So. Well, it also changed frequently.
If you had gotten too attached to Costa Rica or Valencia, you would have been out of luck.
But that's part of the thing, right? That's part of the reason we had so much fun is because we both have this wanderlust and we both get excited about new places and having adventures together. So yeah. You have to sort of guard yourself against getting too excited or getting too wed to one particular place because it may not work for it. You know, it didn't work for schooling, for example, for one of the places we thought about. I was excited about some of the early possibilities in Tanzania because your listeners may not know this, but we met in Tanzania.
We did meet in Tanzania.
So it's an important place for both of us. But I try to really let you take the lead on this.
Well, I appreciate it, even though
it might have seemed a little bit like I was disengaged at sometimes.
There were some times that I was a little annoyed because I wanted you to have more of an opinion, but I do, in hindsight, appreciate your openness and that it wasn't too crazy making for you. We're recording this in our basement, and that's where my office is, and I would sit down here for hours, you know, doing research on different places and filling in my spreadsheets about schools and apartments and all. And then I would be like, Daniel, I figured it out. We're going to this place. And then the next day it would change because I got some new piece of information. If we can backtrack a little bit, can you talk a little bit about what you were up to, your job situation before my sabbatical started?
Yeah. So I was in a very particular position time of my career path. So I was kind of late in my postdoc. I had received a fellowship that extended my postdoc. And so in my field, after you get a PhD, you have to do another training period, and often you do it in something different than you studied during your PhD. So more research. And I had this extension of my postdoc because I got this fellowship, which means I was being successful, which was great. But it also meant that I had some flexibility. But I didn't have complete flexibility because I was on the academic job market. I was looking for faculty jobs. I wanted to become a professor and continue to study neuroscience as faculty at a research institution.
Yeah. So we spent the fall of my sabbatical. I had a year-long sabbatical. We spent the fall in Bordeaux. And at that point, you were, because of the way the academic job market works, you were doing your applications, and then you had some Zoom interviews when we were.
That's right. Yeah. So I kind of finished up, you know, a big chunk of my research that allowed me to do the job search in the fall. And that really meant a lot of applications, some interviews, and kind of framing how I was thinking about my research in my future life.
Yeah. And ultimately we decided, I mean, you mentioned Tanzania. I first applied to a Fulbright in Tanzania, which would have been a year long commitment. And we realized, I mean, I think we were trying to be creative about how we could make it work if I had decided to do that and if I had been awarded the Fulbright. But you couldn't have been away for a full year. That would have been pretty impossible. It was hard enough in some ways for you to leave the lab for 5 months,
yeah,
and not be able to do experiments.
That's right. Yeah. So I had flexibility in that I could do a lot of applications away from the lab, but I was a little bit at a disadvantage because I wasn't actually getting to do any more research, at least at the bench in my lab. So that was a trade-off we had to make. And it would have been more or less impossible for me to be away for an entire year, mostly because of interviews. And then I was responsible to my advisor to get some work done.
Yeah, for sure. So eventually we decided to go to Bordeaux and
Vive la France.
Vive la France. Allez les bleus. So once, I guess, we finally decided, I don't even remember exactly how we made that final determination.
I don't actually either, mostly because it had been like the seventh iteration of different places at this point. So I never really believed we were going until we put in some deposits, I think.
Yeah. Well, in the end, it came down to Valencia, Spain, and Bordeaux. And I took you to Valencia for a whirlwind 3 or 4 days.
Which I highly recommend.
Valencia is beautiful and amazing.
Well, and that and just like, yeah, having your spouse take you on vacation is pretty amazing. To go visit a place you might move.
I'll make a note of that for the future. And yeah, I can't remember why we essentially said no to Valencia. I think
it was the visa problem.
Oh, yes.
Visas were difficult in Spain. They had a short-term or a nomadic
digital nomad
visa, but it required extra work. Like you had to get it translated. It was unclear how easy it was. It just seemed complicated. Whereas with France, it was a straightforward, bureaucratic, but clear process.
Yeah, right. So you're right. It came down to logistics and eventually you get to the point where you have to start putting down deposits for kids' school and apartments and stuff.
And a lot earlier than you might think you would.
Yes, that was in, I think, March or April, and we went in August. So there's a lot of advanced planning and things that you can't really time. Like, we started putting down deposits before my sabbatical had actually been officially approved. I was just hoping for the best. So maybe you didn't know that.
For all of you that know Bethany, that was really never a question in my mind.
Well, anyway, so once we finally decided on Bordeaux, what were you excited about or looking forward to when it came to sabbatical?
I was looking forward to being abroad again. So we hadn't really lived abroad since we both came back from Tanzania, experiencing a new culture. I never actually been to France. So that was something that I was looking forward to. I have a good friend who loved French food growing up and now lives there. Everyone I knew talked about how good French food was. And, you know, it's the world, the best. So much culture, so much food. And I'm like, yeah, okay, fine, whatever. And then going there, it's all true. What else was I looking forward to? I was looking forward to you having some time off and spending time as a family, having some adventures together. I think that was another big thing.
Yeah. Was there anything that you were nervous about or not looking forward to?
I don't think so. I mean, ordinarily I would be nervous about language. But you speak French, so not really. I imagine I'm more of an anomaly than the rule on that, though. I think I could imagine people thinking it would be difficult to live in a new culture in a new place, and I think that's completely reasonable. But I'd like that because getting out of your comfort zone is good for me because I'm a pretty introverted person. That's good. And we were all together. I really wasn't nervous about anything. I think you were actually nervous about whether the kids were going to like it or whether I was going to like it a little bit. I mean, I think you were more nervous for us than I was. It was also freeing to be a little bit on the receiving end is not the right way to say it, but kind of you were in charge. This was your sabbatical. Mm-hmm. You'd done all this planning, which was amazing. And because you're so good at planning and it worked so seamlessly. Yeah. There was really nothing to worry about.
Yeah. I think I was worried that we had never been to Bordeaux before. I had never been to Bordeaux. I mean, I did study abroad in France, but I hadn't been back to France since I was an undergrad. So it had been 20 years. What did I know about living in France with my family? And I think I was worried, what if we hate it? What if this is a terrible place to live? What if the kids hate school? What if Daniel doesn't like working remotely from the bedroom of our apartment? You know, any number of things.
Oh, yeah. There are tons of ways it could have gone wrong. I just guess I'm not. Didn't think about this.
Well, that's good. That's refreshing. I guess I was the only one feeling.
Like I said, I let you both do the planning and the worrying. Great. That was along for the ride.
Appreciate it. So what was a typical day like for you in Bordeaux? And let me preface that by saying, because I think this is a detail that is important, that I had no good reason to be in Bordeaux. So I wasn't associated with the university. I didn't have a regular work schedule. I spent a lot of time walking around Bordeaux and doing jigsaw puzzles, not while walking around Bordeaux, but at home.
That'd be quite a trick.
That'd be weird.
Well, it's a good city to walk around in, that's for sure. We didn't know that. We didn't appreciate how great it would be for that before we got there, but it turned out to be fantastic.
Yeah. So we were both in the apartment quite a bit, actually. So talk a little bit about what a day was like for you.
Yeah, my days were quite a bit more structured than yours were because I did have responsibilities to work. I also had meetings I had to attend in the United States, which was a little bit, it could be annoying sometimes because of the time difference. Though, you know, not insurmountable. It was kind of cool to get a lot of work done before anyone woke up on the East Coast. That was kind of nice. And then you could feel like you're being productive. But yeah, so I would get up and run most days, which was fantastic. We really prioritized taking care of ourselves a bit more, you know, both in terms of exercising. It's such a great city, like to run in, to bike in. And then I would often take the kids to school, I think.
You did a lot of the school drop-off.
That's what I do here at home. So I think we try to do that. And that helps me get started, too. And then it'll come back to the apartment where we set up this makeshift office, and I would work mostly writing applications, writing some grants, talking to colleagues, doing a little bit of data analysis, those kinds of things, sort of just kind of typical remote work sorts of tasks. Take a French lunch a couple of times a week, which was lovely. And then, you know, work through the afternoon, and we would sort of share a responsibility about getting the kids from their school, which was always a lovely treat. And then I would go to the grocery store, and that was pretty much every day. And that was one of the joys for me of being in Bordeaux. It really reminded me how much I love to cook. And so it was wonderful to go to the market every day. It was a beautiful, just lovely place to be, to shop. It was not utilitarian in any fashion. It was just aesthetically nice. It was nice to be there and get to select, you know, food for dinner, and which I would come home and cook. And we would try to make some nice meals and try to do some new French things. Mm-hmm. And then we would spend the time as a family. We'd go to the park when it was nice out, sometimes when it was so hot in the apartment. and then, you know, Bethany would go on some adventure that day or meet new friends. Or one day she came home in the evening and she said, "Did you know that there's a Roman ruin 2 blocks from here?" some structure that was built, you know, I don't know, 2,000 years ago, just down the road. Lovely little treasures and little special moments. So we would share those in the evening and then, you know, do it again the next day.
Yeah. And I think for you, so what I should say about the cooking was you do most of the cooking here and the grocery shopping, because I don't particularly like to go grocery shopping. But I would say, I remember the first time you made chicken, it was just like regular chicken breast to rave reviews. And it's not like we don't like your cooking here.
I'm a good cook. And I'm an even better cook in France.
Yeah.
Because the
food in France is so good.
It's just so much better.
Yeah. So we all really liked that. And I mean, I think you enjoyed it. It was very sort of nourishing for you. But then also we all got really excited about you getting excited about cooking. And we really enjoyed all the great meals that you made.
Yeah. And we tried new things with the kids too, which was fantastic. We had chicken cordon bleu, which is still a fan favorite in the house. Yeah. So that was really fun to share that with the kids as well. So my days were pretty normal, but full, yeah. Rich.
Neither of us was bored, I don't think.
No. And I think as the spouse not on sabbatical, and, you know, that looks different for different people, of course, and what they're actually doing. Are they writing a book, or are they doing research, or are they taking time off? Are they puzzling? Are they roaming the city? You know, for me, it was a little more mundane, but we tried to interject fun things so I wouldn't be bored. And I actually did some other, I don't know if we'll talk about this later, but some other professional things that were also very enriching.
Yeah. So maybe say more about that, because at the beginning you said you were following my lead in terms of my sabbatical, but actually you had some professional opportunities that came up in Europe. So say a little bit about those opportunities.
So when we first arrived, I reached out. There's a university in Bordeaux, which has some fantastic research in my field going on, some neuroscience and I specifically worked with fruit flies. And so I connected with another researcher in Bordeaux pretty early and was able to give a talk at the university, which was really great, and got to know the lab well. And we still stay connected to this day, which is just really nice. I would never have connected with them if I hadn't been there. That was important to me to sort of try to build an intellectual community for me. So I wasn't so isolated. It wasn't as great as I expected. The French, the language was a bit of a barrier for me, but it was still very rewarding. And then I also took some trips that I probably wouldn't have been able to do. I took a course at, there's a big research institution that's sort of an umbrella over Europe called EMBL, European Molecular Biology Laboratory. which is world renowned in my field and very prestigious. And I got to learn some new techniques that I'd been hoping to do, some microscopy. So that was really professionally rewarding. And then I connected with some researchers I knew in Germany and was able to make a trip out there and give a talk at their university. Yeah. And so it was also professionally quite good for me, even though that wasn't really the plan. You know, it's amazing what proximity can do for building those relationships and seeking out those different kinds of opportunities and being a bit flexible. And I was able, luckily enough, to make some connections and connect with people that I had already known, which was really, really lovely.
Yeah. And you made an effort to take advantage of that proximity and reach out to people. And, you know, I think that's a good lead in to then what you decided to do next, which was apply to a job in France.
I did.
So you became such a Francophile.
I loved it so much. Actually, Bethany said it was okay if I applied for this job. And we sort of thought, well, given what we knew about French culture and French science, we sort of thought that there was really no chance that I would get the job.
I was like, sure, apply. There's no way you'll get it. Not because you're not amazing and a really good scientist, but we just thought, not being French, there's no way you'll get this job.
And these jobs are so hard to get, especially in Europe. It's impossible. But it turns out I got the job, which was amazing. And I still think about it. I like literally smiling, thinking about my colleagues in Toulouse and how much I really wanted that job, both because I loved France and I loved the culture and the food and the climate and all the things. It just, they have a different way of doing science in Europe, and it's refreshing. It's not so cutthroat. It is not so beholden to lots and lots and lots of money.
Which could also be a downside.
Which is a downside in some ways, but it's just different. And I really appreciated it. And I got excited about it, applied for the job, and we went to Toulouse, and we just felt like it was going to be so hard to move our family. Bethany didn't have a solid track on a job. In the French system, it's not as easy to get a spousal accommodation as it is in the U.S. system.
Or it's not even easy in the U.S., but
it's not easy here, but
it just doesn't even exist in France.
You can think about it. You can make some arguments, and people have done it. And it just felt like probably mostly the language for me, like starting a lab in French, sounded really daunting. And in the end, we decided that it would be better to stay in the United States. Right.
For better or worse.
For better or worse. But sabbatical being in France really inspired me to look more broadly and to think about Europe as a place, as a scientific home. I had advisors over the years say that the way I think about my work and the way I interact with my colleagues, I might fit well in the European system. But I didn't really believe that until being there.
Yeah. And I think even though we ultimately decided not to move to Toulouse, having been in France for sabbatical has just changed our orientation as a family. Now we kind of try to go to France as much as we can. Say, well, even if it's fine, even if we don't move there, we can still go to France. So we were able to go back to Bordeaux last summer, and we went to the Olympics, and then we're going to go this summer. And so it does feel like we've built this lasting connection, both with friends and just kind of the things we talk about, like, you know, our son Danny will not eat a croissant in the US because he's experienced a French croissant, or like, we're so excited to go eat good baguettes when we go back to Bordeaux this summer.
Yeah, and seeing our friends and feeling a little bit of a connection to that place, to Bordeaux, in France more generally.
Yeah. So I've said many times that my sabbatical was life-changing, and anyone who listens to the podcast is probably tired of hearing me talk about that.
No, that's...
But I'm curious about whether and how you think sabbatical changed you. And you don't have to say it was life-changing. You don't have to be that dramatic.
No, I mean, it is a little dramatic to say that, but I don't, in a very real way, it did change my life. It changed the trajectory of our family. I think we recommitted ourselves to our family, to each other. And I think having a bit of time away makes that impossible, or maybe even just getting out of your routine, you know, if you have to or choose to stay at home. I think that's the biggest thing. I think it certainly opened up my eyes and maybe more of a reminder of the world out there. I think having lived abroad once, I kind of knew that, but then being away again reminded me that the world is a big place and there's lots of interesting people doing interesting things and important things. And I want to be more part of the world, I think, with my family. I think that is true. And that was inspired by sabbatical in France. I certainly became this weird Francophile who doesn't speak French.
Yeah, perhaps the biggest shock of all. I never thought that you would become a Francophile.
Yeah,
to be honest,
it's sort of goofy. Like it's a very American thing to like be obsessed with this European culture that you have really no ties to. But there's a lot of great things about France. It's not perfect, but neither is the United States. But I feel a strong connection to a different place, and that's certainly something that has changed. I always look for opportunities to go back to Europe. France in particular.
Yeah. And I think there were things about the lifestyle and our quality of life. I mean, in some ways, it's kind of nice. And we've experienced this when we've gone to Tanzania for summers, just being in a little bubble with our family. There's something nice about that, just in terms of like, as especially now, as the kids get a little older, I feel like we all got to know each other better. And traveling together, we have this different set of shared memories. And
it wasn't a shared memory like during COVID, where we were in a bubble, which was very traumatic.
Yes.
this was a
bubble of nice, our own making.
A fun bubble.
Yeah. But we also made friends who we still keep in touch with and who we'll try to see this summer when we're there. Something else I was thinking about when you were talking about going to the grocery store and your daily routine. Something that I really liked is we had a little cafe, Café de Minuit, that we went to, you know, every couple of weeks we would go for lunch. Usually, was it Mondays that we really liked?
Mondays, they had the best special, which was steak frites.
Yeah, steak frites. And you had to get there right at noon, basically. Otherwise
they would sell out.
Gone. And we never made a reservation, which you're supposed to do. But there was just a different rhythm that felt, you know, we weren't constantly running off. Okay, you're taking Danny to baseball. I'm taking Clara to swim. We're, you know, everyone's headed in different directions. I feel like we had just lots of time together as a family that was so much less hurried than our lives here. And I think that was, I don't know, that just played a role in us really connecting. And I don't think we ever didn't value our family, but I just think it helped you and I connect with that value even more and remember this is the priority. The job is not the most important thing. It's this family unit and the kids and our relationship.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So my last question for you, Daniel, is what advice do you have for spouses on sabbatical?
I should have anticipated this question.
You should have.
But I did not. The one piece of advice is sort of what I tried to say at the beginning is let them take the lead on sort of the structure, the framework. There's always going to be practicalities with any sort of relationship and family unit or what have you, a partnership. So those will have to be worked around. Can you leave? Do you have to stay? You can't go. Maybe you have celiac disease or something. Like there are practicalities you can't get around, but I think as much as you can try to let them take the lead, because then, and it can really be theirs. And then beyond that, just being open to an adventure. I think I thought I might be jealous of your time away from work during those months, but I wasn't really, because I think I was pretty engaged in what I was working on. So that was helpful, but I could imagine it being not true. So I think having your situation,
clear purpose
that's situated within the sabbatical, I think that's important. And to remember that Bethany worked hard and we as a family worked hard in those early years to get her to that place. So we sort of earned that. I think that's what I would say. And have fun with it too. If you can, in some way, make it a sabbatical for you too. I mean, I did cook more.
Yeah.
I did take a long lunch occasionally.
Sometimes we had a little bit of wine with lunch, even at home.
Well, it's part of French culture. It's not.
Yes.
It's
with our cheese course.
And engage in it and don't be afraid to be a part of it too, I think. I don't know. I had such a good time. It's hard to not to think fondly of it. So.
Yeah. Well, thank you for being so supportive of all of my different whims when it came to planning sabbatical. And it's so gratifying that it worked out as well as it did on so many different levels, right? We didn't even talk about just, I don't know, all the like fun travel we did and the places we explored in France and beyond France that left a mark on us too. And so I think it's just, it probably wouldn't be too dramatic to say that it has altered the trajectory of our family.
Yeah. And something like more practical is it really gives us all touch points for having funny and fun and conversations about places we went and funny things that somebody said or did. And
or times that we were chasing after a bus.
Little inside jokes.
The schedule wrong.
which you can have anywhere in the world, even at home. If you structure your time away from your work in the right way, is possible. So,
yeah,
well, you guys strive for that. Maybe. Yeah,
you guys benefited from my second half of my sabbatical because we now have so many little pieces of pottery in the kitchen cabinet.
We have pottery galore.
A million tiny ramekins is what I like to say.
Not quite a million.
It was not that prolific.
Thankfully.
This is why I can't do pottery anymore. All right. Well, thank you, Daniel, for being you, for being willing to take a risk on a new place and for being such an accommodating and fun sabbatical spouse.
Thanks for taking us on sabbatical.
I hope you found this episode of Sabbatical 101 helpful and inspirational as you think about your own sabbatical. If you want to read more about sabbaticals or get even more support for planning your own life-changing sabbatical, head over to my website, www.bethanywalinsky.com, to read my blog and for more information about my sabbatical coaching program.